What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, Robbie. Hello, world. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by myself, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. We're tracking this on a lazy Sunday afternoon, and I am feeling it. So if I mumble through some things, it's because my brain, like something's just not working right here. FYI.
I feel that. The Sunday afternoon fog is real.
It is.
It's either like anxiety for the coming week, or if you don't have that, then it's just like exhaustion from the prior week.
It's crazy. I also look like I'm about to teach you a golf lesson with my Augusta National hat and my golf polo here. But
that's nice. I like the blue.
That's actually good. Reminds me of something I want to tell you. I had a little bit of a crazy trip this last week. So I'm going to give you all the details real quick. Okay. So this is pretty crazy. About a month ago. Okay. Let me go back even further. When my parents were just married and they had my sisters, in Seattle, Washington. Then when my mom was pregnant, we moved to Iowa, Northwest Iowa.
Nice.
But when I was in Iowa, my dad still painted houses and taught a summer camp in Seattle. So growing up from zero to about second grade or third grade, every summer we'd spend about 5 weeks in Seattle. So every time I was there, the Seattle Mariners were playing. My dad would have the games going on the radio while he was painting. And so that's why I became like a lifelong Seattle Mariners fan, but not a Seattle Seahawks fan. I have followed it ever since, even through Michigan, now in Nashville, I still follow the Seattle Mariners. So imagine my surprise when I get a call from my friend Kirk, NFL quarterback, who says, "Do you want to go to Seattle with me?" And there's a really long story here, but the short version is, there are these machines that this famous baseball player, you probably don't know who Ichiro is. Do you know who Ichiro is?
No.
Hall of Famer. Oh, man. One of the greatest baseball players of all time. Stays healthy forever. He's been healthy forever. He swears by these machines made by this guy in Japan. He's Japanese. Ichiro Suzuki. And you can only get them from this guy in Japan. And Kirk is interested in these machines, buying some for his health and longevity. Some flexibility and strengthening machines or whatever. So apparently one of the Mariners staff, like a trainer, says, "Yeah, we can show them to you." But the star player of the Mariners, Julio Rodriguez, swears by them. So Kirk calls me and says, imagine this call. I get a call. He says, "Do you want to go to Seattle with me? Go to Julio's house to see Ichiro, Hall of Famer, and Julio, and they'll show us these machines." This is like, for me, this is... You can't even, that's like, I'm trying to think, it's like, "Hey, do you want to go hang out with all of the hobbits for a day, you know, real quick?" That's what this is like. So I'm like, "Well, absolutely." Anyways, a lot of details went into that. We're leaving Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. He's coming from Atlanta. His brother's coming from Orlando. So Orlando to Seattle, almost the furthest flight you can take inside of America. And I'm in Nashville. And at 7 o'clock my time, 8 o'clock their time, the trainer texts us, "It's off."
No.
Trip's off. Well, he's like, "What do you mean it's off? Like, we have flights booked cross country, hotels, rental car, a golf tee time at Chambers Bay, which is an elite course. How can this be off?" Anyways, the guy like entirely flaked on us. Like, he said, he gave us some weird excuse. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but it was like, I think he never actually talked to Julio or Ichiro about it. Like, I think he just basically this whole time for a month was like, "Oh yeah, they love doing that stuff. No problem." And never actually did it. So he called me and he's like, "Should we cancel?" And I'm like, "Well, we should still go. We were planning on going." So anyways, last Tuesday, flew cross country to Seattle, Washington, just to play golf and watch a Mariners game. And then we flew home across country. So what a weird trip.
But like, fun.
It was fun. So shout out to my Seattle listeners. I did a AMA on the airplane on the way over.
Oh, nice. You know, I feel like sometimes that's nice, though, because you wouldn't have been able to justify the trip otherwise. But then it's already happening. And now you can just kind of have like a no stakes, just hang
trip. No doubt. I mean, granted, if I was paying for any of it, I probably wouldn't have justified it anyways, but I'm not. So yeah.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
are you?
I'm great.
Did you take any trips to Seattle this last week?
I did not. I took a trip to Fredericksburg, Texas, which is very similar in so many ways.
Pacific Northwest of Austin.
it's funny. I think what did someone compare it to the other day? It cracked me up. It wasn't the Fredericksburg. It wasn't like the Marfa of like, anyway, I'll think of it at some point. It was one of those like, this is a very generous comparison that you're making, and I'm not quite sure that I'm going there with you, but you are a person that's from Fredericksburg, so I'm gonna nod and like show assent in this moment. But I
didn't get that at all. I am a person from Fredericksburg.
I was talking to a person from Fredericksburg.
Oh.
Who they were saying it was like the Boulder of Texas or it's nice. Like Fredericksburg is nice. It is different from a lot of the like small towns that you would have to go to when you're randomly arguing something in Texas state court. So I like normally a town that I would rattle off like that, it would be like a real bummer to go to. Mm. And Fredericksburg is actually a spot where a lot of people will like fly into Austin and drive out to. They've got like a bunch of wineries and stuff. And so it is like a nice area. The Napa of Texas. I was out there arguing in court, and that was like a full kind of week prep.
Did you win?
Thing. Yes and no. We
did
kind
you
of
have
like,
that stash while you were arguing or not?
I did. Well, I
does
did.
It help? Does it help
I,
or hurt?
I
your
did,
case?
But I still had. I had more scruff around it, so it wasn't as prominent. So it's hard to say. But no, it was good. We kind of like lived to. We accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and part of that was just making sure that I didn't look like a total moron and. I think that not look like physically because I did have the stash
because you did. You
so
don't.
That's still up for debate, but
no, it's a not safe for work stash right now. Sure.
But, otherwise it was good. It was just a big kind of a low sleep week. And so this weekend I've just been sleeping so much, which has been really nice.
I love it. That's good for you. You need sleep. You don't sleep enough. You know how often we come on this podcast and we go, oh my gosh, massive day. So many things going on. You're not going to want to miss this. Like that's 95% of the time. So I'm going to be honest. Today's not one of those days. As you can tell from our first 8 minutes, we don't have a ton going on. It's right in between some Marvel projects and whatnot. And so I was just reflecting this week on one, I am slowly catching up on Andor. I'm 5 episodes in. And
yeah.
The Ironheart trailer dropped, which I want to talk about here in a second.
I want to talk about both of those things too.
But at the end of this episode, we got a chance to chat with one of the gentlemen, Ian, from Sun Lux. So another composer jumping on Friends from Work, which we freaking love. So that's kind of the highlight of today's episode. It'll be after a quick ad break. Stay for that last 25 minutes or so. Really fun. And it's actually a really unique one because Sun Lux is a band. Mm-hmm. This is not your typical like Alan Silvestri interview. This is like a band that makes a living doing music as a band. And now they've done a couple of films, maybe three, and they're starting to get into it.
Yeah.
And so just a really fun conversation. He's also 36 years old, I saw on Wikipedia. So it kind of makes you feel stupid that you haven't accomplished more in life.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I've still got 3 years.
I don't. I'm out. I'm out of time. Go ahead.
Well, I do want to talk about Disney Plus stuff this week, and so I guess we should probably start with Ironheart, but I also do want to do kind of an Andor check-in because you and I haven't gotten to talk about it much. I think I'm 2 episodes ahead of you.
7
So I've got like 5 left, but
I've heard like episode 8 is like supposed to be unbelievable, like, or 7 or 8, like somewhere around there is
it must
where it
be
like kind of
because that's the I think that's the next one for me. And I did start like I was actually watching it kind of in real time, and then like we just, I think it, the second week was when you came in and we were doing podcast stuff and I just fell behind, which is like, I like that they're releasing it the way that they are and that they're thinking of it as basically every week is kind of a feature film length piece of the story. And they obviously all combine into an arc, which is what they did in the first season. But now they're releasing it in that format. And I do like that, but it also makes it so hard to fall behind or so easy to fall behind really quickly. And so I started seeing people in the Discord, not like spoiling anything, but adding us like, are you watching this? This is crazy. And I'm like, man, I want to, but I am now like 6 episodes behind and each of these episodes is pretty long.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, part of it for me is just when something is for our job as friends from work podcast co-hosts, then we rush to it. Like I have to watch Daredevil Night of, but when I don't have to watch something, I typically take it pretty slow unless it's the 1% of the 1%. Like if you're the show, like Severance became must watch.
Right.
Other than that, I'm okay with being a little bit behind just because I'm slow to these things. Yeah. Life, family, video games. Like it's tough for me to keep up sometimes with all the stuff. So
I like that video games is like in the Holy Trinity, like life, family, video games.
Golf trips to Seattle. Sadly, it is. Like, that's what's crazy is I love the community I have playing Warzone. Yeah, no,
that's fair.
So it's like, now it's 8 o'clock. My daughter's finally sleeping after a long work day. A lot of times my answer is, I just want to play with the boys. I want to go shoot some people with the boys.
Yeah,
and so it's
the
tough.
Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, at minimum, it's every other night. You know, that's the best ratio you're going to get if you're a show.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. I this has nothing to do with Disney Plus really quick. I just want to say for me personally, so this is not from a critic standpoint. This is not pushing someone a certain direction. I can't stop thinking about Thunderbolts. The more I've listened to the music, the more I talk to Son Lux, I love it, man. Like critically, it's around that top 10 area. But for me, preference wise, I'm trying to put my finger on why. I was thinking about the song that's playing during the conversation between Yelena and Red Guardian. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I texted you. That's one of my favorite MCU moments ever.
Yeah.
And I've been so confidently recommending that film to people.
Yeah.
That's the other difference for me.
How many times have you seen it now?
Just two.
Okay. Same.
But I went to the IMAX that we always talk about in Nashville. Nice. That's fantastic. And when you watch it with Annika, who loves this kind of thing, she loves Black Widow. This is totally her scene.
Yeah.
It also just kind of brings more feeling. You know how that goes. The watch with somebody. Now I've seen it and I'm living vicariously through her emotions and her, like her laughs at jokes, et cetera. I love it, man.
I actually think that is a perfect segue to kind of what I was thinking. I mean, we talked about Andor for a moment and on the Ironheart front, we have talked about how kind of starting with Deadpool and Wolverine, there was a bit of a tightening, in a good way, obviously tightening release schedule from Marvel Studios. But also, you know, like it's felt like it's in a positive trajectory, not quality wise necessarily, but like reception wise, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I, as we were kind of looking ahead, we thought, okay, Captain America might be a dip. Like we didn't know. We went into it with like hoping that it would be great. And I think we did not think it was like a disaster, but it felt like in terms of kind of to the extent that the public at large has lost trust in the Marvel brand, at least to the degree that they once had it.
It didn't help its case.
But I think we also thought it wasn't going to hurt it that much as long as they followed it up with Thunderbolts being good.
And Daredevil,
which I think have kind of like both, it's just been like a steady ascent. And I think that is really setting the stage for Fantastic Four to be really great. And I think like Thunderbolts is exactly what I thought it would be when I'm talking to people, which is like, I think a lot of people didn't really know fully what it was or like what they were. It's not as easy as even like a Captain America movie in terms of knowing what you're going to the theater to see. But I think the people that have gone to see it have all had the reaction that we thought they would. Like everyone that I've talked to from the kind of like random barely follow Marvel people to the people that are real like comics nerds, which means they're kind of generally like cynical about the MCU. Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone kind of along that spectrum has loved it. And that's sort of what you need here.
I want to pause you right there because from a box office perspective, it's doing well, but it's not the same juggernaut it used to have when they were just hitting out billion-dollar movies sure. every time. And I know why. It's the Josh Wilsons. It's the Grant Gertzmas of the world who they would love Thunderbolts, but for some reason, maybe it's the lack of they don't know the characters. It's the
right.
It's the Brave New World stuff. It's the just in general burnout for them. They haven't seen it yet, and yeah. those are the people that would have gone 5 years ago. And so that's why it would have been double the box office that it is now. But it's not because it's not unbelievable. 90% audience, 95% or 95% audience, 90% critic. I haven't talked to a single person that has not liked it. Even the trolls on the internet, I only see positive things. I don't see negativity. I love it. But so that's why I was going to pause you. Yeah, like I know why it's not even bigger than it is.
Well, you know, again,
and those people like, will see it on Disney Plus and they'll love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so, and that's the interesting thing looking like, you know, Thunderbolts was everything that I think we hoped it would be and that we were hearing it would be. And then, you know, Fantastic Four, I think is really the movie that is going to test like what people's appetite is for like a classic Marvel movie experience, because mm-hmm. it is like, that's the thing for this year for Marvel for sure. Like that is where everything is being funneled into. It's like whatever like Infinity War was for 2018 and whatever No Way Home was for 2021. It's like that is the big feature. I am curious how Ironheart slots in here, not like plot wise, but I think like, and this is not even me wondering whether it's going to be good or bad. It's more just, I wonder what it, like how people that go and love Thunderbolts, like, did they then think, oh man, I love Thunderbolts so much, I should go back and watch that Daredevil show that everyone was saying was great. Or I love Thunderbolts so much, I should go watch this Ironheart show that's coming out right after. Or do you think like people are getting to a point because of just how much Disney Plus content there was at the get-go where they're almost like parsing those out anyway, to where like even if Marvel films kind of come back to be what they have been in people's minds, certainly towards like the end of the 2010s, do you think that like trickles down to Disney Plus series numbers again? Or do you think that those are now like, even in Marvel's mind, separate tracks?
The whole conversation is fascinating, right? And the disclaimer here is we love to approach these kind of conversations with, what's the word? I don't want to say maturity, but we are not the bros who review bomb Last of Us Season 2, even if we disagree with something or it's not perfectly for us. And we don't come on here and try to bring people down. But
which I do love The Last of Us Season 2 at this point, by the way. But we did have a really fun conversation about that.
On Friends from Work Plus. Yeah. Would you say that this statement is fair? Just objectively, not me. I know there's going to be truthers. I know there's going to be people that hate Ironheart no matter what. There's going to be some people that are going to defend it because it's the MCU no matter what.
Right.
This is the least anticipated show project ever. It's gotta be. And I think Marvel's even slightly aware of that, because I did this AMA on my flight en route to Seattle and people were asking me about Ironheart. Like, you know, like it's a little bit strange that they dropped the trailer so late, that they're going to do a drop of three episodes and another drop of three episodes. That's how they're doing it. Maybe Echo would be the only other time that this felt this way, but some of the burnout hadn't happened at that point, and there was a little bit of tie into Daredevil.
It
was a holiday thing, so I think there was a little more draw there. I haven't heard a single person talking about Ironheart one way or the other, and because I don't know anything about the character from the comics, I don't know. And then it just makes you wonder, with what you're saying with the reception, do you think if money was all equal, they would have canceled the show? Now, in hindsight, like, they obviously can't cancel it because they've spent a lot of time and effort making it.
Yeah.
But everything we talked about, like the confidence leading up to Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four, the way you're talking about it, just the directors, Kevin Feige coming out, the trailers coming out, like the reaction to it, everything about that. No, very little reshoots and positive thing. And we're going to put the review embargo out 2 weeks early. Like, this feels like the exact opposite, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the flip side of that, though, like, you know, talking about Andor, which has been doing the three episodes a week thing and has like perfect reviews, like across the board, at least critically. I'm not sure what the like audience scores are, but it seems like everyone's loving that. But also, that's kind of again, dropping three episodes a week is not really something that's that easy for the average person to keep up with that isn't really into watching shows like this. And so they are sort of assuming that there's not going to be an ongoing week-to-week conversation for that show in the same way that there would be for Severance or for The Last of Us. And
so maybe it's smart to not even try then, maybe.
Well, and that's kind of why, like, I've been wondering, and again, this is going to sound negative, and I actually don't mean it this way, because this is no commentary on the quality of any of the Disney Plus series, because, again, it launched with The Mandalorian, which I think, by and large, people thought was one of the better Star Wars moments that we'd gotten in a bit, whether you agree or disagree on that. And then WandaVision obviously was like a massive success. Loki, like all of that was within the first year of Disney Plus existing. So this is not me saying that Disney Plus has just been putting out bad things. But I do wonder, as we're looking back like 5 years later, like, do you think that Disney Plus as a source for original content is a net positive or a net negative for Disney, but specifically for like Marvel Studios? And I say that because there's a world where Marvel could have made the shows that we love. Like, that's not saying like, oh, well, but then, you know, we don't get WandaVision. Because I don't think that that's totally true. I think there's a world where, like, look, you know, The Penguin is owned by Warner, and so it comes out on HBO, and Disney could have worked out a deal like that with some streaming company like Netflix or Hulu because of the Fox stuff or whatever. And I almost wonder sometimes, like, with a show like Andor, where so many people have Disney Plus because it's like the way that they can put on the shows that their kids want to watch. Like, I wonder sometimes if it's hard to get people to, like, that are not already like hardcore members of whatever fan community, to even know to take something like Andor as seriously as you would take an HBO show, because it's every bit as good as like a prestige HBO show. But there's something about like it being in this like kind of like closed Disney community where I just feel like it's been so hard for them to get that kind of week to week conversation there that other platforms have been able to run with. So I don't know. Thinking about Ironheart, and like to your point, I just wonder, has it been like, is it something that you think they're happy with, you know, looking back on the performance over the last couple of years, or do you think that it might have been a misstep?
It's a rock and a hard place a little bit, because there was just a conversation from the Marvel higher ups, I think last week at some event, and that they basically kind of said, there was this article that said Kevin Feige was saying that a lot of the MCU stuff now had become like a chore because it was so connected and people couldn't jump in because there's now so many projects. And that part of that was, we are going to make Disney Plus back to, like, these are not going to be film characters. Did you see that? That it's going to be like its own isolated thing. So there's all this discussion about how much are the new shows going forward going to tie in. And I think they kind of solidified it was going to be three movies maximum, one to two live action shows, and one to two animated shows. And that was it. And so if that's the case, and they want to do more serial content, so like Daredevil season two might be the only live action show they do now. And they're not going to start doing, now granted Vision and Wonder Man are still happening,
coming,
but like they're not going to try to make shows where the show characters tie into the film. And I understand that thought, right? It makes sense for all the people that you're talking about who have lost their way. But at the same time, you know, I it kind of also hurts because that is the reason why I like it in the first place. Like, for example, WandaVision was, those were film characters and they tied into the films.
Yeah.
And that continuation is what a Marvel fan loves and craves.
Yeah.
So if you just make a totally isolated series, I'm not inherently interested just because it's a thing. But I understand the pressure of, well, at some point it's 40 projects for someone to catch up on.
Right.
Now, even that I'd maybe push back on because I go, like, Thunderbolts doesn't require you to watch 40 projects. If you watch five projects, you would enjoy the film even more. But you don't have to watch Guardians 2 to appreciate Thunderbolts, as just an example.
Right, right.
So it's not fully connected in that way. Like, you're so far behind.
To that point, though.
But who's curating those playlists for them? I don't know. You know, for people who don't know.
We are. Or
Disney tries to.
But I do think, like, that's even an interesting question because Thunderbolts really does, like, there's a decent amount there that like pulling on Falcon the Winter Soldier, which again, I'm sure there are a ton of people, one, that show followed up WandaVision and I think a ton of people watched it. So I think a lot of the people that are going to Thunderbolts that are just kind of like MCU fans that were really MCU fans post Endgame and then kind of slowly fell off might have actually seen that show. But at the same time, for people that didn't, again, it's fine. The movie doesn't expect you to have seen everything that those characters come from. But it is, like, I think, kind of a chore for people, not because the show's not good, just because it's like six episodes and they're like on, you know, like longer drama length episodes. And so it's kind of like, if you want to tell someone, like if someone watches or is going to see Thunderbolts and wants to know about John Walker, it's just kind of a harder sell to be like, oh man, like you need to go watch this six episode miniseries than to be like, oh yeah, you should go watch Black Widow because a lot of the characters come from there.
Yeah. To your point on the Disney Plus platform, though, I am not as well versed in the overall kind of perception of these platforms as you are, I think. So take this with a grain of salt. I don't think that's true. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what community, I guess, are you referencing? Like people at work, they're all willing to talk about like Game of Thrones, but they're not willing to talk about Andor. And you think that's because they see the Disney Plus logo?
No, I'm not saying that people are like, oh, it's Disney Plus, it's for kids. I think I just mean that there's something about the Disney Plus platform that feels like it doesn't break through into the general conversation in the same way. Like, it's because to me, I don't know, there is something about like an HBO show. And right now, Apple is kind of having a moment, you know, between Severance and Silo and the studio, and like there are movies or shows that are kind of entering more of that HBO conversation. And I, for some reason, like it's like the Disney Plus shows, I think, because it's all Disney content. But I feel like
Andor has pretty much entered that conversation, at least online. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not as in.
I mean,
my brother watched Andor, and that's really rare.
I guess, again, I'm not saying quality wise. I think it's just kind of like the difference is HBO or Apple. Like you could kind of get anything there. Like it's not confined to like a certain batch of IP or like genre.
Sure.
Whereas I think like with Disney,
but it also has a lot less because of that. Like Apple TV has a lot less, just generally speaking. Now the shows they do make are great.
Yeah. Well, a lot less shows.
There's just a lot less stuff on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, and I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I think Disney Plus as a place where like Disney movies and like you can go and watch Lion King and you can go and watch like old Marvel movies, having that whole library there is stuff that is Disney branded, I think is one thing. I guess I'm just wondering at this point, like, because unlike Apple, like the stuff that comes out on Disney Plus is like Disney branded, like it is Marvel stuff. It is Star Wars stuff. Like, and so I just wonder sometimes, like,
yeah,
you're going to subscribe to that and watch that stuff if you are into like Disney's like IP, like the things that Disney owns. And if you're a fan of that, then you're going to be plugged in. If you're not, then you might not even really spend much time on Disney Plus anyway. Whereas I just think some of the other platforms, it's a little bit easier to like to get exposure to because it's not like within this closed system in the same way.
Yeah. And I didn't answer your question earlier because I don't know. It might not be a net positive. I saw that Daredevil, for example, gained Disney Plus 1.5 million subscribers instead of they were anticipating a loss of like 2 million.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big surprise at their earnings for Disney. But I don't know. Like if they could redo it all, like Marvel Studios specifically, would they just stick to the films? Or like you're saying, have an occasional miniseries that releases on Hulu?
Yeah.
Maybe. I ask myself this sometimes, and this is real dark. We're getting into it. We're like, this is heavy. If I wasn't hosting this podcast, would I have stayed up on every single show to this point? Would you have? Would you have watched every single thing? Because I think if I wasn't hosting this podcast, I wouldn't have watched X-97, which I ended up loving.
Yeah.
But I just the way I am, like I'm so slow to all this stuff. I'm only on episode 5 of Andor, for goodness sakes. And that's like really adjacent to this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I probably wouldn't have seen Echo. I probably wouldn't have seen Ironheart. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe eventually I would have. I don't know.
So I think
this is the one thing I'll say. So the one place you are correct in even asking the question, because you're implying an answer when you're asking the question. But I do miss the general consensus being so positive and it being such a moment. Like I was just in Seattle with Kirk and his brother Kyle, and some truthers of this podcast will remember Kyle. Kyle is a perfect example of he was all in.
Yeah.
And you remember we even had him on the show 3 or 4 times. And you remember the conversation around COVID era where he's like, man, are all these shows, am I going to have to watch them? And that was from someone who was in.
Yeah.
And that has stayed true. Like, I wouldn't say he's burnt out, but he has kind of left the MCU. Stephen Matthew got lunch with him last week. He was all in. He went to those movies with me. He went to Infinity War with me. He hasn't watched a lot of the recent stuff. Andrew Senga hasn't watched the recent stuff. And these are people, these are not casuals. These are people that were in.
Yeah.
And so if that's because of Disney Plus, that part is a bummer. It's not just because of Disney Plus, but it is a bummer that 5 years later, that's where we are. And I guess Ironheart, signifies that whole conversation. Whereas I feel like you brought this up before. It was the last project to not be reined in, you know, like to be trimmed or left of the chopping block. Cause now they are. Now it's like, it's only going to be 1 to 2 shows. It's going to be Daredevil directed by, you know, Benson and Moorhead, and that's it. And we're going to make it the best thing ever. And try to command the weekly conversation, like you're saying, but we're not going to just throw out 4 or 5 shows. Yeah. This is the last one where, because I haven't heard anything from them, it feels like they would have cut it if they could have. And I guess this is not at all what I thought we'd be talking about today.
No, but I was thinking about this afternoon. Holy cow. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to ask Kyle what he thinks about this.
Yeah, wow. And you poked the bear, and now we're 35 minutes in. But you know what I mean? That part is sad. That part's just sad.
I think,
especially for someone who hosts a podcast.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's a mixed bag. It's been fun for us to have so many things to talk about, like so many new episodes. I think to answer your question, I probably would not have stayed up on it. Not because there are shows that I look back and think, oh, I should have just skipped that. But more like, I think I am only on top. Like, I only even know what is coming out on Disney Plus because of the podcast, you know,
and Greg.
We have the newsletter, like Greg keeps me up to date on that stuff. And part of that is me being off socials for the most part, but it's like, yeah, if I weren't like plugged in intentionally for that reason, I think I would kind of have a similar, like I've always been a bigger Marvel fan than I am like a Star Wars fan, but I feel like, you know, there are times where I look up and I'm like, oh, what is the Skeleton Crew? And then I look and it's like, oh, that's like a John Watts, Jude Law thing. That seems fun. And I still haven't watched it, even though I've heard that it's great. And I feel like I would probably have that with Marvel. And I would wonder, like, when did this come out? And what does this like relate to? And what's the right timeline? And should I go back and like rewatch something else to set this up? And I think
where it's shocking from my perspective, though, is like, that is me, what you just described, for everything, though, too.
Mm.
Like, for example, I haven't seen Sinners yet. I haven't seen Sinners yet. I know Sinners is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But that's different, though, because that is
name any show. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's different because that's not an ongoing, like, Marvel is it's a thing you've already been a fan of, and it's an ongoing narrative that you are, you know, even like we started the podcast because we were invested in. Right. And so I think it's like,
well, and I am, by the way, right. That's not me bailing on the whole
thing. No. But I do think it's like,
I see what you're saying.
It's just a lot to keep up with. And so I think it's like, again, this is all stuff like we've talked about that side. And I think that there's so much great stuff happening that I'm not at all like, that's why I don't view this as a negative thing. Cause I'm not like, oh man, like Marvel's really gone downhill or something. I was just thinking like, yeah, I do wonder, you know, like Bob Iger, I think is whether he's like rewriting history or not. I think lately he's taken to pinning a lot of blame on Disney Plus. And it's funny because I feel like I remember.
They were all excited about it.
Yeah. Like I think before Iger left, you know, he viewed that as a positive new like avenue for development. And granted, in the COVID years, it was, you know.
Well, and it's important. Well, and they came out of the gate with WandaVision too.
Yeah.
It's important to note. And The Mandalorian, like you're talking about. I think people were like, oh my gosh, this is what it's going to be like. It's important to note that this streaming world is unique for everybody too.
Yeah.
Every single, I don't know if you saw this. I saw that Apple is losing, like, I think, I don't want to get this wrong. I think it's like $1 billion a year on Apple TV Plus is what they're losing. But they're such a massive company, you know, just their name being out there, it's probably partially viewed as advertising. So that has nothing to do with the quality of the shows because they have some of the best shows made in the last 5 years on there and they're still losing money. So my point is from the business perspective, like Bob Iger, they're all trying to figure it out too. You gotta remember that. No one knows. Sure. Like, and theaters are like, what do we do now? Because now movies are going to theaters right away. And, you know, it's just like, it's a very shifting landscape.
I mean, like, you know, talking about Warner and Max, you know, they're finally changing it back from Max to HBO Max.
Again. They've rebranded like 7 times, literally.
Which makes so, like, it never made any sense to me that you would surrender one of the most, like, well-established, like admired brands in TV. Like,
by why taking you would those just, 3 letters out of it, you mean?
Yeah, like why? Like
no one Max, calls it Max.
No, and Max is the most generic, like non, like at least with like Disney Plus and Apple TV, you know that you're getting stuff that's made by Disney and Apple. But like with Max, you're like, I don't even, what company is this? Like,
yeah,
there is no, like, I'm not familiar with like a Max studio. So I'm not, so I think you're right. I think everyone's been, I think Netflix is kind of the only one that has consistently been ahead of the curve there.
That's because that's all they do. Yeah, they started and that's all they do. They're not also making computers.
I mean, and they've been doing this since.
Or theme parks.
Daredevil, like the first year, I think was like House of Cards, Daredevil back in like 2015. And they've been like working on this model since then. And the other thing that I think is really unique about Netflix over even the other ones I was talking about, like including Disney.
Like Amazon, by the way, that can't be a moneymaker for them. There's no way if Apple's losing money right?
Well, no, I mean I think it's a different model and they have access to
It's a different model because they have you sign up for a yearly thing anyways for Amazon Prime and all this stuff.
And like, you know, but yeah, the Lord of the Rings show, there is no way that makes money in the long run because of how crazy the budget is. And how crazy like the price just for the rights was, I think, in the end. But I know like Jeff Bezos views it as a pet project. Like I think he's a big Lord of the Rings fan. So, and because he's Jeff Bezos, it just doesn't really matter. Like he's just going to make every season of that show because he wants to see it. That's what I'm saying. But I do think like on the Netflix front, part of what I was getting at, asking about like the release strategy here and having it go direct to Disney Plus is like Netflix as a brand is not so tied to any one property or series or like, because there are so many things on Netflix and some of them are made by Netflix and some of them aren't made by Netflix. And a lot of people don't really know often which is which. And so you can kind of watch a movie on Netflix or a show. And I just think the catalog is so vast that even if you're like, that was terrible, I don't think people come away with the same like bad taste in their mouth for Netflix because they almost think of it as like closer to a middleman service. Where I think like every time Disney Plus is putting out a thing Netflix's with Disney fault. Branding. Yeah. It's like, even though if Disney is
a bad Star Wars show, it's Disney's fault. Right. They did this.
Which is also hard because so much of the like online troll objections to like the Marvel Star Wars buyouts by Disney were like, oh, you know, Disney's just going to like water it all down and it's going to be worse and boring and vanilla. And so I think that, I just it's like an interesting counterfactual, I guess.
Going all the way back to the very first thing you said, you asked, do you think the average viewer is able to parse those things out, the differences between the movies and the... And I think, for better or for worse, yes is the answer right now. Like, yeah. I don't think there are that many people that went and loved Thunderbolts that now are going to see, like rush to see Ironheart and then go like, oh man, they've lost their way. I think for the most part, it's the whole like narrative of if they've lost their way or whatever, that's mostly just kind of curated by people on YouTube that are being obnoxious.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, you go, I'm not really interested in Ironheart, but you could still like Thunderbolts and you just move on till Fantastic Four. I don't think that, for better or for worse, that people are now feeling the burden of, oh, I like Thunderbolt, so now I need to go Daredevil and Falcon Winter Soldier. And well, I don't think they're feeling that. Like that's a lot of, and that's where I say the only bummer about Ironheart coming out now is that it feels like with Daredevil and then Thunderbolts and then Fantastic Four coming, that they did kind of flip the script. I now took a lunch with Steven, Seth, and Cooper, and I'm there, and Seth is now kind of back in. He's like, yeah, like this is getting really good again. And this is, and so nice. I just don't want those people to then feel like, oh, Ironheart, and it's not good or it's like left aside. And so like that's the PR hit that I was talking about in my Ask Me Anything on Instagram. That's the only part where I'm like, I'm able to go, if Ironheart's not like a slam dunk or it is or whatever, I'll just be pleasantly surprised. And I am able to kind of parse that out as a thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't influence really my overall momentum towards Fantastic Four. I am nervous that from a PR standpoint and the loud YouTube people that you're not able to do that. And it does like damage the whole brand. Like you're talking about the Disney Plus brand, the Marvel Studios brand. And I haven't seen a second of Ironheart. I have no idea.
No, you know what I mean? And I think that cuts both ways. Like I also think if Ironheart were to be incredible and one of the best things that's come out on Disney Plus, which is totally possible. I'm not sure that that really moves the needle either for Fantastic Four. Like, I think that, like, I don't think that's going to make people more excited for Fantastic Four than they already are. So I think you're probably right. Like, I think that there has been, probably intentionally from Marvel's perspective, like a bit of a separation. Like, even the, like, you know, we talked about Daredevil having kind of the opportunity to link to Thunderbolts, given that they both have the New York connections and both have the kind of like bad guys in charge element. And they really didn't at all.
It didn't at all, but it does have that same kind of feel. Like, I felt like I was in the same New York tonally, visually, in that way linked, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I do, like, you know, they...
Thematically.
It does make, yeah, but it does make sense, like, the comment that you, that you're saying about them not wanting to be overly connective there. Like, I wonder now if it's, if it's making more sense that they don't do those things, or that, like, you know, like we talked about how like they follow up Deadpool and Wolverine with Agatha all along, which again was like a big hit by a lot of metrics, but in no way, like, if they were trying to like capitalize on some momentum that they got with Deadpool and Wolverine, like, that's a very strange project to do it with. Like, I think that they were viewing those as like, they're the people that are going to watch these, like, these shows have. And, you know,
we have to move on. But my last question to you then is, do you think that that is a model that could potentially work? That's not what they're doing, but like all the way back to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. days, would Disney Plus be more effective if every single show was a follow-up to the movie? Like, if, so for example, if you did like Thunderbolts and then immediately the next show was just more of like the ground level agents working on that stuff, or Fantastic Four, you get another project inside that realm or something afterward.
Yeah.
Would that be better? Like, as almost like an epilogue, a follow-up. And so they always were tied, but not in a way where you have to see the show to appreciate the movie. Yeah. I mean, is maybe that the model you can head back towards?
I mean, you're right. I mean, that is kind of what, you know, even the original Daredevil season, where they are talking a bit more about the Battle of New York, and it doesn't have anything to do with it, but it's kind of this, just like, we are living in a world that is impacted by this big movie event. And yeah, I mean, I do think that that is, I think that that's an easier model because it feels both like optional, but also,
if you love this, here's more.
Yes. Yeah, so it supports the movies, but it doesn't become something where you're like introducing, you know, like if you went to see the Marvels, and I do wonder sometimes how much this impacted it. I remember going to see the Marvels and walking out and talking to someone that was at the critic screening that loved it. Like, she was like, that was so fun. And I was like, oh man, did you see Ms. Marvel? Because I think she was like specifically calling out Iman's performance as being so great. And I was like, yeah, Ms. Marvel's really fun. And she was like, no, I never did. And I do wonder, you know, she went as a critic going to see it and review it. But I do wonder how many people that even maybe would have gone to see the Marvels didn't, because there was a whole new character introduced in a show that they had never gotten around to watching. And so it just kind of like you kick it till like, well, at some point I will. And so I do, like, I think the follow-up is an easier thing for them to maintain than like, we're going to introduce characters in Disney Plus shows that, and give you like their whole origins there. And then you're going to meet up with them later in a movie. Like, I think that's putting a lot on like the average moviegoer's plate.
Well, that's what Kevin Feige says, you know. Whereas for me, I kind of like that Ms. Marvel was in the movie and then also in the show, because I was watching them both. It's just, it's a rock and a hard place, because if you never tie them together, then it's the complaint that we're talking about. Like, why watch any of the shows if it's like an average show and it's not at all tied in? So like, you will get some viewers by tying it in.
Well, and
but if you tie it in too much, then it becomes a project, a chore for people.
And I will say, to bring it back to Ironheart before we hand it off to Ian, that is what that show is doing. So I appreciate that, like, we were introduced to a character in Wakanda Forever.
Right.
And then I think this is one of those, like what we talk about with Black Widow, like I just think this show would be much more anticipated if it had followed more closely on the heels of that film, because that was almost 3 years ago now. And she was like a side character within that movie. And right. So it's like,
so what if that was the next series?
Yeah.
A month afterward.
Like, I think that would have been really fun.
Synced up. Yeah.
Like, it's relevant in people's minds. And
I wonder if they look back 5 years from now and at least regret the release schedule that we used to always complain about, you know, the Hawkeye No Way Home and then not making it a thing.
Like, right.
Call one thing out. That's a weird one because of the Sony rights, but call one thing out just that you feel like you're in the same spot. It's a follow-up to what happened in No Way Home. Or,
yeah.
And they kind of do what they, you know, they talk about the Statue of Liberty, but you know what I mean? Like just a little bit more, but there was more extreme examples like Black Widow and Loki. Remember that? Where it's like, okay. Yeah. Those are two totally separate entities you're asking us to watch, but
yeah. Yeah, it is. So I don't know. I'm going to try to like, I think I had read that Ironheart is supposed to follow pretty closely, like in time to Wakanda Forever. Like I don't think that it's supposed to be something where, you know, 3 years have passed.
Okay, so this is all pre Thunderbolts and Brave New World, probably. And okay,
I need to obviously watch it and see what before.
And then hopefully it's great, and then you drop it in the rewatch order after Wakanda Forever, maybe.
Yeah, which I do think is fun because you know Wakanda Forever is like Riri is one of the lighter parts of a pretty heavy movie,
mm-hmm.
and so I do think that following it up with something like that is nice. Mm-hmm. And again, I really liked her in that movie. Like we talked about how there was maybe there were parts of it that were shoehorned in, probably unnecessary, and made everything a bit clunkier. But I never had any issue with her performance. Like I really like her, like the characterization in general of Riri there. And so in that sense, it's, you know, now it's kind of work to put ourselves back in that mode so far after, but I do feel like it has a chance to be a really fun watch. I think like they're introducing reintroducing some elements of the original Iron Man mythology with like Ezekiel Stane being involved and like obviously
the professor from MIT in Civil War, that's the same guy.
Yeah. So you know, I think like What did you think about the trailer as a whole?
It was fine.
Yeah. That's about how I felt.
There's a poster that actually got me more excited because there was a poster where it shows her and then this silhouetted figure behind her that looks like an Iron Man, but almost looks evil, like pulling puppet strings. If there's something like that where she gets pulled to a dark side or something, that could be really unique and interesting. Something kind of different. I don't know.
And it does look like there's that element, like she's potentially working with the bad guys, either
the
without
hood.
Knowing it, or she thinks it's like a necessary evil. And so that is an interesting dynamic. And I like the visuals of the suit so far.
I will say the trailer, like the CGI looks pretty great. We've come a long ways. That suit up where she's in midair and then it catches her kind of thing looked really great.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the video of Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio watching the trailer?
No. The Ironheart trailer?
Yeah, it cracked me up. It's funny when they do this because it's like you know, like that's the Disney Plus show that has gotten a lot of great attention recently, and so they're like, you know,
you
look
react
like,
to this.
Yeah. And it's just, you should watch it. It's like such a non thing because they have very little to
say,
to really say. But it's just funny because Charlie Cox is such a good sport. And the whole time he's like, he seems to like genuinely enjoy it. I'm not saying he's faking it, but it's funny because the only word he really uses is wicked. And he says it like six times, like in the
he's got nothing to say. Someone from PR probably just put a camera right in his face, goes like, just react to this, go. And he's like, what is this? What? Wicked,
which
cool.
is also like, yeah, it's so hard. Like, what are, like, all you can really do is be like, oh, so cool. But I am looking forward to it. And, you know, the one nice thing timing wise is you mentioned Sinners, Ryan Coogler is the executive producer of the show, and he's already been doing some press around it. And Ryan Coogler's name right now is like as hot as it's been,
as maybe it can be.
Ever. Yeah. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's like, so I think that that is, it has that going for it.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. Real quick, nitty gritty, four things here. One, like I said, we're going to talk to Sun Lux, really fun conversation. Be sure to do that. We have some fun episodes coming out. I'm officially going to tease this. You and I are, for the first time ever, going to do a two-part YouTube series. It's going to be podcast episode as well, but video might be a good aid for this, where we just officially rank all of the Infinity Saga and then mm-hmm. all of the Multiversal Saga. And we're going to have that up on YouTube. We're going to be doing that in the next month or so. So that'll be fun to check out. Also,
yeah.
I want to give a little plug here for Friends from Work Plus, because when things are a little bit slower on the main feed, if you still want Friends from Work in your life, that's where to go. We've been mm-hmm. putting out an episode each week this month, including our Last of Us conversation, a really, really fun conversation earlier this week about the five most criticized MCU films, according to mm-hmm. me, a comic episode, and more stuff upcoming, including it's about that time that you and I go back through the original Fantastic Four films, three episodes, yeah. Yeah, one per film, which is always one of our favorite style episodes to do. We did this with the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and mm-hmm. the Amazing Spider-Man series. We did it with the original Daredevil with Ben yeah. Affleck. And so we're going to be going through the three Fantastic Four films on Friends from Work Plus before that movie comes out. I'm sure mm-hmm. once we turn the page officially, you're going to be talking about that kind of stuff a lot. And yeah. that will be like one of my first introductions into Doom. So like that's going to be the
oh, wow.
and yeah. like, you know, some of those characters. So that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Friends from Work Plus. It costs money per month, but it really helps support this podcast and you can get more content from us. And then secondly, I just want to remind people that organicpricebooks.com is an incredible mm-hmm. comic partner of ours. You know that already. Use our promo code Friends from Work. And then recently partnering with homage.com
yeah.
to make incredible and get your incredible merchandise that Robbie's wearing, licensed Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and sports merchandise that feels great, looks great. You're going to love the way you look, Men's Warehouse. homage.com. If you're going to go there, please, 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 please use the link in our show notes. It helps yep. us and supports this podcast. Okay. Ian from Sun Lux joined us after this break, and man, he was fun to talk to. We're not going to have an outro to this, so when we say goodbye, we'll say goodbye now. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out this interview, and we'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors. Ian, welcome to Friends from Work. Let's go.
Heck yes. Thanks for having me.
What an honor this is. All right, Ian, obviously magnificent work on Thunderbolts. I want to zoom out to start. Let's talk from like a macro level here. Mm-hmm. What was the first pitch like? And when you get the first pitch, after I hear that answer, I want to know kind of how do you guys decide to take that pitch and like start crafting the sound? How much of it is programmed out? How much of it is real orchestra? Like, how do you find that balance based off an initial pitch?
It's a great question. I think the first thing important to note about the pitch was when we got it, which was we got it really early, like before they shot anything, which can be rare because, you know, composers often are part of the post process. And we were pitched with, we got to read a script, an earlier version of the script, and it was the director, Jake Schreier, who kind of like put our name in the hat and kind of pushed for us to be
cool.
at least in a contender to be the composers for it. And the pitch from the beginning, and I think this extends to also sort of what Jake was getting from the studio, was to make this a different Marvel movie. And that definitely extended to the music in some ways. But it's also about finding the balance between, you know, putting a twist on it, but also still honoring a very established, you know, universe.
Yeah.
And, you know, connected stories and the sounds of those. So it was great that you asked about orchestra specifically, because that was, you know, something we talked about from the very beginning, which was that we knew orchestra would be a big part of the sound, because that's a big part of the sound of the MCU. But as a band, I would say we've always had the sound of orchestra as something that's been really inspiring for us. We've never had the means to really work with an orchestra in a recorded capacity, or like to write for orchestra in this way. So that was something that was exciting for us, to kind of delve into. And, one thing that Jake told us from the beginning was that he wanted us to start writing from a place of making things not feel too huge or grandiose or too bombastic, which is, you know, what one would typically associate with a superhero film.
Right.
And I think in retrospect, at the time we were just like, you know, you're going to need some bombast sometimes, you know, like there are definitely going to be moments, but in retrospect, I think he was guiding us because it's in a way easier to scale up from something that works in a very specific way, smaller, than to start huge and then try to find like this like, smaller, but still propulsive kind of feeling that I think he was after. And one of the references he gave us was the bank robbery scene from Heat. I don't know if you know it, but the music in that is just relentlessly minimal, like kind of electronic percussive thing. And so that was like, you know, one of the reference points alongside sort of more orchestral things. And I would say that's where we kind of started from.
I love that answer, because the very nature of having you guys do it, it's going to meet in the middle, because, you know, you're not used to scoring in a traditional way. You're coming from a post-rock like band, instrumental type thing, and then having you do that, but then you guys trying to blend in the superhero thing and the Marvel thing ends up being this perfect middle ground where multiple times during the film, I'm hitting Robbie going like, this is so fresh and different. But then Robbie also pushes back and goes, yeah, but this is also like still have that traditional cinematic thing. And so you leave with like the whole spectrum kind of being covered. So bravo.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And it's good to hear that it's translating that way.
Oh man. I told Kyle, I think on our first episode reviewing the movie, this is one of my favorite Marvel scores in years. And obviously we love the music of the MCU. I mean, the MCU has got a long history of really great talent, on that front specifically. What y'all did was so, it did feel like it was moving the ball forward, in a unique way. Mm-hmm. And it made me curious, you know, you talk about kind of this tradition within the MCU of orchestral, like often kind of bombastic. I'm thinking of like Michael Giacchino in more recent years. As you were getting ready to work on the score, I don't know if y'all are already MCU fans or not, but was it something where you kind of felt like you had to go back or wanted to go back and do a bit of research on that front?
You know, I think I'd say between the three of us, probably varying degrees of like I've seen a handful of especially the earlier MCU movies. Mm-hmm. But in general, none of us are like deep in on that world. And I would say both in terms of the movies and also their scores, however, definitely a handful of the composers that are like Giacchino and Silvestri, like people who compose for like MCU often, like, you know, those are huge names outside of the MCU, right? And like, you know, we're fans, you know. And so we did do a little bit of listening back to things, and there was also specifically actually something that we were kind of told by the studio from the very beginning was that like I can't tell if I should like do a spoiler alert, but basically the big reveal in this movie at the end requires a certain, they wanted the music to sort of like quote, but not like completely,
yeah,
like quote outright, but like kind of
right.
grab an aspect of the Avengers theme, mm-hmm. By Alan. And we did that by taking, like, I think one of the most memorable things about that theme is the rhythm of the melody. And it's kind of mm-hmm. crazy. Like, we didn't take anything but the rhythm. And it's been really cool after the movie's been out to see how many people are just very clearly picking up
right.
mm-hmm. on that reference. And it's just the rhythm. And I think that's like a strong testament to like that original writing. It's just iconic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and you sneak it in the Watchtower track. Too.
The horns,
yeah. Quick good, little good blink and you yeah. miss it.
Yeah, we like things like that.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about a specific song or two. The theme that you came up mm-hmm. with for, I think it's called I Don't See Your Mistakes, but that cello mm-hmm. Thing that happens at the beginning of the movie too. Can you just kind of talk yeah. me through the process of creating that song? When did you kind of know that that would be like a focal point of the emotional sections of this film and just kind of the behind the scenes of that?
Good question. So I think I'll start by saying that one of the main aspects of that sort of piece of music is the cellos, like you said, and they're playing like basically a very simple bass line movement thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that material is culled from like when we were exploring theme ideas, we kind of came up with like a very heavily arranged, many layers piece of music that included that bassline movement, as well as like certain like ARP material that ended up being theme on its own, as well as melody. So we kind of like made one piece with a lot of layers and broke it apart in various ways throughout the movie. And I think in a lot of ways, from a storytelling perspective, you'll hear pieces of this throughout the movie, like, but not all together, or like maybe only two of the things together, or like in the Bucky reveal section, like three things together, but then like it all comes together at the very end. And that, from a storytelling perspective, I think the feeling of that is very much mirroring the way that, you know, the Thunderbolt, like those characters were not trying to work together at first, yeah. you know, like, and
that's cool.
And like, they kind of become a team over the course of the film.
Oh, I love that.
And for that specific, thing that we kind of, became the sound for, I guess, the relationship between the father daughter relationship between, Yelena and Red Guardian, was something that we definitely felt was, you know, Jake directed us and we all agreed, like, felt that it needed to. You know, David Harbour's character is so comical most of the time in the movie, mm-hmm. but there's these few moments where like we really need to kind of feel
mm-hmm.
that like connection. And so that was sort of where we were coming from with how we wrote for those sections.
Well, freaking mission accomplished, because I was driving in my car today, literally tearing up listening to it. Oh, so no. It works, man.
Thank you, man.
That it helps capture one of, as MCU fans, one of my favorite moments, literally in MCU history, like a top 10 moment, that moment. And I just don't think that moment hits as hard if the track wasn't as good as it is. So nice work.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. It's funny when you talk about Jake kind of giving you all that guidance of starting small and building up. It almost makes me think of what I've heard Hans Zimmer say about the Interstellar score, where it wasn't really that he was given guidance by Chris Nolan, like, you need to make this epic space opera sound, but it was more, it's this movie about a father and a daughter, and start there and then build out from that point. And you know, for a score that I think a lot of people consider to be one of his best, I've always loved where he roots it in kind of that theme, rather than it's like the substance over the form of it, I guess. And
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I really like that.
It feels like that's something that y'all are doing here, both in like scope, but also like Kyle and I talked about in the review of the movie. I love that the final battle is pretty small scale. Like it, there's the kind of classic dig or joke at Marvel films and superhero films in general that they have to end with this massive, you know, explosion coming down from the sky or something. And I think the movie kind of starts, it's a fake out a bit, like you think it's heading in that direction for a second, and then it turns back inward. And so I feel like the score is so crucial to reflecting that in those moments. So I think it, without that, I'm not sure that it would have worked as well, because you get this kind of like epic, but again, like really tender thing. And so I'm sure that was hard for y'all to balance, but it comes across really well. And I wonder, like in that stuff, are you thinking to like pull back on the percussive elements to avoid letting it like move too much towards that bombast? Or like, what was your, as you were looking like specifically kind of at the final sequences, what was your approach and what were you trying to convey like artistically, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's like the pinnacle scene in the film. You know, like, and I think the way you just described it and compared it to what is typical for these movies is right, like perfectly on, like on. And this was one that we kind of did pretty late in the process, and was definitely the scene that went through the most edit changes, both visually as well as like musically. We really worked hard on it, and we definitely at some points we tried throwing in percussion and things for certain parts of it, like, you know, when Yelena's like running, like things like that, but like it didn't totally feel like it was serving the moment. And also there's a lot of like sound design that's happening at the same time, and that's always something that like we're trying to be cognizant of, not like over cluttering things. But yeah, really ended up working best as like a pretty big but still like hyper like emotional sweeping, like not like driving kind of thing. And I have to give kudos to Ryan, who really like composed his ass off for that scene. And it's like probably one of my, and I love like that we're a collective, for a composing collective and a band, because I get to say that like that's like one of my favorite pieces of music in the movie, and I'm not like, talking about something that I did, you
know?
I
totally get that. Kyle and I are both musicians and used to tour together, but one of my friends that has always produced my stuff, it's
no big deal,
it's always fun whenever he makes stuff that he will that he produces and records on his own, because I get to listen to it, and it's part of our, like, it sounds so much like the music that I make because he produces all my stuff, but I can't listen to my own songs in that way without like going full Kanye. So but I, that does lead to one of the questions I had. What is y'all's process like, you know, splitting it among the three of you and composing that way?
Yeah, it's very, you know, I think since this is our second film together, in a lot of ways, we're still discovering. I don't think we've like totally landed on a specific process, because like the way we worked on this and the way we worked on the last film we did, Everything Everywhere All at Once, was different. And but one thing that I will say, I think it's easy to like see like a band of composers and assume like that everyone's sort of playing their instrumental roles when you see like us on stage, for example, like that I'm like doing drums and percussion and Rafiq's like doing guitar, which like one of the first things we heard from Jake in the beginning was he was just like, yeah, no like drums or guitar on this on the score.
Well, your band.
So
that's, but yeah, like, they always say limitations breed creativity. Yeah, so
totally. In general, we kind of don't fall into those like categories neatly when we work on stuff together, and it's very much like we'll kind of like, everyone will be people, like I would designate myself as like the starter or at least to try to start, like, for like a number of scenes, like I'll be like, you know what, I think like I can take these, and Ryan will take some and Rafiq will take some, and they'll kind of just be things that we connect with. But also I think one major difference in the way we did this film, was that we did a ton of pre-scoring. Like we did a ton of writing before, like I said, we were engaged early.
Oh yeah, so early.
And the strikes happened as well, so it just really increased like the amount of time we had. So we wrote a lot, and we wrote a lot like in collaboration with Jake, kind of giving us like notes on, like we kind of found the main themes together, and like we were making iterations of them and like taking notes from him. I have no idea actually how many pieces of music existed, but we basically created like a pretty massive library. And that meant that A, Jake was able to play pieces of music for, like, he played something for the cast before the first table read.
Oh, wow.
Or he, like, played something for the actors, like, specific things, like, before they would shoot certain scenes and things like that.
That's got to be pretty unique, by the way, to have the music ready at that point. By the time they're reading.
Or, like, ready enough, you know what I mean? Like, we hadn't recorded orchestra or anything yet, but we are real nerds about mocking that stuff up, like, sound as good as possible.
Yeah.
But, like, it was really cool to be able to be an establishing force in that way and part of sort of like the, I guess, creative atmosphere. And a lot of those, like, what it meant that the first edit was like completely temped with our own music, and a lot of what was temped ended up staying. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, my final question is about Everything Everywhere All at Once, kind of in general. I just actually watched it on my flight again for a second time. I literally tweeted after it. You can fact check me. It's one of the best films ever made. It might be one of the best films ever made. And I also feel really strongly about Thunderbolts. So with you guys being 2 for 2 and just absolutely crushing, generically speaking, is this something you're hoping to do more of, get more into? How do you find a balance between that and your original music that's not film scorey going forward?
We are definitely doing more, and in fact I can say that we are just starting on a project by director and writer filmmaker Bassam Tariq. The film is called Your Mother, Your Mother, Your Mother. And the lead is Mahershala Ali, which is,
oh wow,
yeah. And the script is freaking amazing, so that's something that we're like just starting on, and it's going to be completely different than the other two scores that we did, which we're really excited about. And we're definitely interested in doing more of this work. I think it's something that we've really kind of found a love for, but at the same time, like, we are also working on our own music, and so I guess yes to all of the above is the answer. But you know, it means that we're not spending as much time on the road and stuff like that, but that's a good thing, to be honest.
I would imagine you're only gonna get tons more calls, so prepare yourself, they're coming.
Yeah.
If people listen to what you did the last two times, you're going to get called.
We feel very blessed. And it's crazy to be like able to work on such amazing projects, like kind of, and we're just starting. So
yeah, that's cool.
We don't take it for granted.
That's cool.
Well, you know, coming out the gate and getting an Oscar nomination isn't too bad.
doesn't hurt.
Well, my last question here, and then we'll let you go. This is obviously, you know, a unique thing, and I know, like you said, y'all have your own stuff going on outside the film score world, and I'm sure you will start to get into all sorts of genres of film. But do you see yourself kind of returning to the well at all within Marvel Studios or this genre? This is not me asking for any kind of like inside info. I just mean, do you have the desire to do that and kind of play in the sandbox more, or is that something that you kind of like to put your stamp on something once and then move on to the next thing?
I think time will tell, but one thing I will say is that the experience of working with an actual live orchestra we recorded the London Contemporary Orchestra, who are so amazing, like so also open and open to experimentation and collaboration. That experience was like kind of game changing for us. So like, for example, the next scores we're working on probably won't have as much orchestra at all, but I know for a fact that like, that's something that we're going to want to do again.
Yeah. Good.
And the sandbox of the MC, like, you know, the superhero world or whatever this genre you want to call it, like definitely
right.
is in that world. And it's, yeah, I mean, I don't think we're experimenters at heart. So we're always going to try different things, but it also doesn't mean that, you know, one time is not always enough to
yeah.
fully feel like we're exploring something. So,
yeah. Well, I love to hear that.
You love to hear it. Ian, you're the man. Thanks for your time. It's been our absolute pleasure. Appreciate you.
Likewise. This is great.
And
thank
hopefully
you so much.
We will be hearing more from you pretty soon. That's exciting.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.